let me put this very candidly. If I were taking over a $50 billion project, I would be a lot more worried.
Lawmakers hear concerns about the state's new plan to take over the gas line project. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 26th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a petition group gathers signatures to seek a ban on commercial marijuana sales in Fairbanks.
A lot of people were just unsure about what all had been legalized under this law. I think one of the biggest things they're surprised by are the edibles.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The state of Alaska is formally taking over the massive North Slope gas line project. After months of mixed signals, Governor Bill Walker's administration and the state's three current partners, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips, told lawmakers this week that the state will take the lead on the megaproject as soon as this fall. It's a stunning departure from the approach the state has pursued for the last 2 years, marking yet another phase in Alaska's decades-long quest for a gas line. And as Rachel Waldholtz of Alaska's Energy Desk reports, lawmakers were told this week that the new approach comes with major new risks.
At about 3 p.m. on Thursday, the legislature's consultant, Nikos Safos of Analytica, stepped up to the mic to give his verdict on the state's newest proposal.
Let me put this very candidly. If I were taking over a $50 billion project, I would be a lot more worried than I feel folks are worried. Right, that this is, there's so much stuff that comes with it. And most of the things that have been offered as a reassurance have yet to reassure me.
Safo said the state is taking a huge risk. During an hour of testimony, he often had the air of a man frantically trying to flag down a train before it heads off a cliff, warning that if the three oil companies are stepping back, it likely doesn't make sense for the state to step forward.
You usually want to take over economic projects, not uneconomic projects.
A combination of low oil and gas prices and the high costs of the Alaska LNG project have prompted the state's three partners to reconsider their investment. ConocoPhillips testified they're unlikely to fund any project into 2017. ExxonMobil said they're willing to continue the current project, but on a slower timeline. Governor Bill Walker's administration has rejected that proposal, arguing the project must come online as scheduled in the mid-2020s. His administration is opting to push forward on its own. Safo says the state is ignoring other options.
You know, there's a spectrum of where we are right now to the state taking it over. And I can think of about like six permutations in between. And we've gone from one to the other, and I have no idea why we're not doing any of the things in between.
At the end of the day, he says a state-led project could make sense, but Alaska hasn't yet done its homework. Walker administration officials acknowledged there is work to do. Keith Meyer, the new head of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, says he's looking at two major changes. First, full state ownership of the project. That could exempt it from federal taxes and drive down its cost. Second, bringing in outside investors, for instance, pension or equity funds, who might be willing to accept a lower rate of return than the state's current oil company partners. Can you do both at once? He says, right now, that's unclear.
What we're trying to figure out now, and it's going to take some you know, significant work, can we have those two things live together?
A report from the outside consulting firm Wood Mackenzie offered some support for both of those approaches. But lawyers consulted by the legislature cast doubt on whether a project with outside investors would qualify to be exempt from federal taxes. Speaking after the hearing, House Resources Committee co-chair Dave Tallarico, a Healy Republican, said the hearings had raised more questions than answers.
One of the biggest things that I think I'm taking away from this is the amount of risk that we may be taking on, taking on a state-led project. So I think that's a consideration that we really have to think about.
Lawmakers may not have much time to think. The project will begin to transition over to the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation in October, with the state expected to take full control by the end of the year. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waltholtz in Anchorage.
Since last November, ExxonMobil has been the target of a growing number of attorneys general, state attorneys general, investigating whether the company lied about its research on climate change. Alaska's new attorney general has jumped into that fight, and some lawmakers are criticizing her. They say it's a flip-flop from the state's original decision not to investigate the company, and the state shouldn't waste money getting tangled up in a lawsuit. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
While Alaska's Attorney General isn't yet willing to weigh in on whether ExxonMobil lied about its climate change research, she is ready to battle the company over its tactics in fighting the investigation. Some states have subpoenaed financial and research records from the company. Exxon fought back in court by suing to block those subpoenas. Former Attorney General Craig Richards signed a memo in June cautioning attorneys general nationwide against aligning themselves with environmentalists and investigating the company. But Jonna Lindemuth, who took the top lawyer's job earlier this month, signed onto a friend of the court brief arguing against Exxon's move to block one such investigation. Exxon is asking a federal court in Texas to block a Massachusetts state subpoena, and Lindemuth says this is an issue of federal overreach.
The issue in that case is whether a large corporation, and it could be Exxon, it could be any large corporation, can go to a jurisdiction outside of the state where those investigations are happening and try to quash the investigation from a federal court in a different state.
Lindemuth says states should have the right to protect consumers and investigate fraud cases in state courts rather than battling them in federal courts. But two House Republicans are criticizing her for what they say is a reversal of course for the state. House Speaker Mike Chenault and Judiciary Committee Chair Gabrielle Ledoux say the state shouldn't have a role in the lawsuit. Ledoux, a former attorney, says she's not read the brief Lindemuth signed, but she says she doesn't think the state should get involved.
I just don't think that in our time of limited resources that we should be expending money going to war with our major industry.
The Attorney General's office says Lindemuth signing the brief doesn't mean the state will be compelled to appear in court as the lawsuit plays out in other states. No one from Exxon immediately returned a phone call seeking comment. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Sponsors of a voter initiative to ban commercial marijuana businesses in the city of Fairbanks submitted more than 500 signatures today in an effort to get the measure on the fall 2017 ballot. Petition sponsor Vivian Stiver with the group Drug Free Fairbanks says petitioners have gathered well above the 519 required, but the signatures must be of registered voters who live in the city and are subject to review.
Say they look at the signatures, there are several that are bring us under our 519 because they're thrown out for whatever reason, we would then be given an additional 2 weeks to collect the difference.
Stiver says petition sponsors have until September 15th to get the required number of valid signatures. She says she gathered signatures at several locations this summer, including outside the library and at the Tanana Valley State Fair.
It was interesting. A lot of people were just unsure about what all had been legalized under this law. I think one of the biggest things they're surprised by are the edibles that can be out there. They are very much likened to national brand foods, very hard to distinguish for young children the difference.
Stiver says many people she talked to also did not realize that under the statewide ballot proposition passed in 2014 legalizing recreational and commercial marijuana, local governments have the option of banning retail sale of the drug by ordinance or voter initiative. Drug-Free Fairbanks also has a petition in the works to ban retail sale of marijuana in the North Star borough outside of the cities of Fairbanks and North Pole. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, one man's nail bender is another man's museum treasure.
The history really was what wrapped it all up. And there seems like there's a lot more history and a hammer. It's the king of tools.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future that delivers oil today and sustains operations for tomorrow. And by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbaalaska.com.
Alaska State Troopers say lab tests show the presence of the powerful painkiller fentanyl in heroin seized from a village where four people recently overdosed on heroin, including one woman who died. Troopers say 19-year-old Jamie Roberts died in the village of Quinnahock earlier this month, and two others were flown to Bethel, where they were treated and released. Troopers spokeswoman Megan Peters says the fourth person was treated locally. According to troopers, heroin seized in the community of 700 contained more fentanyl than heroin. Troopers say that ratio is a first for Alaska. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid 50 times stronger than heroin, and that's responsible for a recent surge in overdose deaths in some parts of the nation. A sample taken from a migrating mallard duck in Fairbanks has tested positive for bird flu. Avian influenza is carried by wild birds, but the disease is far more deadly to domestic poultry. State veterinarian Dr. Bob Gerlach says only low pathogen strains have been found in Alaska bird samples in the past. Dr. Gerlach says this month's mallard sample is also the first from a wild bird to test positive in North America since 2014. He adds the strain is very similar to the last one, which resulted in a 2015 poultry die-off in the Midwest.
To find this particular virus is a big concern because of those outbreaks that occurred in 2014 and 15, and we want to make sure that we can keep our poultry populations in the United States healthy.
Dr. Gerlach stresses no domestic birds have tested positive so far, but farmers should take basic precautions to protect their flocks from interaction with wild species. Gerlach says humans and other animals are not at risk from the flu strain.
It's not known to cause severe illness in people, but we do tell people that if you're going to be out hunting, that you should use the common sanitary procedures when you're cleaning your birds.
With just one of numerous samples taken from migrating birds this month in Fairbanks testing positive for avian flu, Gerlach says it's unclear how prevalent the strain is. The sampling is part of regular avian flu surveillance begun in Alaska following the first outbreak of the disease in Asia and Europe in 2005. A longtime business manager for three village corporations in Bristol Bay has been fired from his job following accusations of embezzled funds. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Aleknagik Natives Limited Board President Molly Chifla confirmed Tuesday that Fred Nishimura has been fired as the business manager for the village corporation. Leadership for Ekwok Natives Limited said Nishimura's contract as business manager had been terminated and an independent investigation was underway. Panarikuk Incorporated, a subsidiary of Stuyahok Limited, better known as the Peace Store, has also cut ties with Nishimura following a civil case judgment this month for more than $50,000. Chithlik and Jim Valentine, an attorney representing the for-profit corporations, said they hope to make more details public following further internal review of records, perhaps as soon as the end of this week. Court documents from a civil case filed this year against Nishimura show a judgment for the Peace Store in New Stuyahok of nearly $57,000. That included legal fees plus $52,900 from 39 checks the corporation alleged Nishimura wrote to himself over the course of 10 months in 2014. Nishimura provided bookkeeping services for the store under an oral contract, according to the lawsuit. Reached by phone Wednesday morning, Nishimura denied the accusations and said he may seek legal help to clear up the matters he described as misunderstandings. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
As Alaska's daylight hours diminish in the fall, the increasing darkness raises the chance of drivers hitting wildlife on Alaska's roads. Moose collisions present the most common and dangerous hazard, and as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, a few factors are common to most accidents.
University of Alaska Fairbanks geography student Yob Nordelos is finishing up a master's project on moose vehicle collisions in the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
I'm from the Netherlands and I arrived 3 years ago here in Alaska, and I was completely scared of driving on the roads. A lot of people told me about how moose just jumped on the road.
Nordelos cites three Fairbanks area human fatalities resulting from vehicle moose collisions during the study period between 2000 and 2012. In the 12-year span, vehicle moose collisions averaged about 100 per year in the North Star borough. Nordelos says moose tend to get hit just after sunset.
They seem to be more active just after sunset, and I think driver's behavior is also an important factor here, because people drive home often tired after a day of work, and they don't really pay attention to things around the road.
Nordelos points to vehicle speed as another key factor.
Roads 55 miles per hour are like the worst.
Clearly the number one issue with moose collisions is the speed of the vehicles.
Alaska Moose Federation Executive Director Don Dyer agrees with Nordelos that basic driver precautions best reduce the risk of hitting a moose.
Be aware of what you're doing, and in places where there is a lot of brush close to the road, slow down. Have a good set of lights. Pay attention and watch the sides of the roads. Don't just be tunnel vision down the highway.
Dyer's group is contracted by the state to pick up roadkill moose and get them to needy people. He says about 700 moose are killed by vehicles statewide annually, most in the Mat-Su, followed by Kenai, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Dyer cautions that moose get creative when trying to cross highways and cites an Anchorage trouble spot.
The moose do go across the bridges, say at Minnesota Avenue, and I just picked up a huge bull moose there on Sunday night. Also, last October, that was where there was one fatality accident because a moose did walk down an on-ramp and go underneath the bridge, and a motorcyclist hit it in the dark.
Dyer and Nordelos both point to moose collision reduction measures like speed zones, warning signs, roadside fencing, brush clearing, street lighting, and wildlife pathways, remedies that have been successfully employed on some Alaska roads. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Alaska Vocational Technical Center, Alaska's Institute of Technology, also known as AVTEC, had to close the doors to their Anchorage satellite campus earlier this month due to budget cuts. Heather Beatty is the executive director of Alaska Workforce Investment Board. As a spokesperson for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Beatty says the closure was partially due to the 33% budget cut to the state general funds. But Beatty says the agency has had to make many cuts in the past.
We've looked for savings everywhere, but unfortunately, these cuts are so deep that we are at a point where we're having to close some of our offices and eliminate some of the programs we offer.
The state of Alaska opened AVTEC in 1969 to help train workers for construction of the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. AVTEC programs include maritime, culinary, welding, other training programs. Last year, nearly 1,400 students completed long-term training at AVTEC. The Allied Health Program has been offered through AVTEC's Anchorage campus. Now that the campus has closed, AVTEC can no longer offer their main nursing programs.
The Allied Health Program that was operating in Anchorage typically served about 100 certified nursing assistant candidates each year, and about 20 people each year enrolled in the registered nursing and the LPN programs.
The last group of licensed practical nurses graduated in November of 2015 before the LPN program was shut down. The Medical Office Assistance Program is still being offered at AVTEC's main campus in Seward. As for the future of AVTEC, Beatty is hopeful for fiscal stability.
It's so important to be able to offer good quality job training in our state so that people have the skills they need to go to work in careers that are going to help them earn a good wage and provide what they need to raise their families.
AVTEC's main campus in Seward will remain open.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Through photography, video, and stories, the Salmon Project celebrates the power of salmon and community. Visit salmonlife.org to experience Salmon Life stories from all across the state on Instagram and Facebook. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
We'll be right back.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, lots of hammers. You may have heard NPR's Morning Edition running their Unsung Museum special this summer. Well, it turns out Alaska has its fair share of them, including the Hammer Museum in Haines. It's a place where hammers are revered and boasts stories both heartfelt and weird. The museum has been open for more than a dozen years, providing a public display not to be matched. KHNS's Jillian Rogers visited the unique gallery and has this story.
You know, it easily could have been saws.
That's Hammer Museum founder, Dave Paul.
In fact, we won't even go there because I've got a big saw thing going on, too.
He says he didn't have a clue that a tourist attraction would be the end game of his hammer collection, which he started decades ago. The museum features 2,000 hammers on display, and that's not even all of them.
But, you know, I think the combination of the variety, the collectability, you know, I had about a hammers for my own use before I even had any thought of collecting. And then the history really was what wrapped it all up. And there seems like there's a lot more history in a hammer. There's a lot of history in saws too, but the hammer was man's first tool. It's the king of tools. That's what they say.
The museum nestled in a cozy spot just off Main Street and guarded by a 19-foot replica hammer opened in 2002. It became a nonprofit a couple of years later. Since then, Hammer Museum t-shirts and trinkets emblazoned with cheeky sayings like, "Nailed it," and "I got hammered at the Hammer Museum," fly off the shelves in the summer months. On a busy Wednesday, cruise ship passengers crowd into the small space and marvel at the collection.
Hi, welcome to the Hammer Museum.
Oh, we are happy to be
here. Oh, good.
And yeah, in case you missed that, MC Hammer is playing in the background. Hammer time. Go with the flow. To enhance the atmosphere on Wednesdays, the museum's busiest day of the week, they play Hammer-related songs and MC Hammer. Gloria and Mark Olson are perusing the collection. They're cruise ship passengers from Battleground, Washington.
I love it.
He said, I'm going to take hundreds of pictures here.
How can there be this many different types of hammers?
Ashley Reed is the museum's director. She says people step through the door and usually their first word is wow. But there are those few.
There's definitely people that are like, oh, well, I came to look for this hammer very specifically, and we may or may not have it out on display, but that doesn't mean that it's not hanging around.
Most of the specimens belong to Dave Paul, but some have been donated from around the world. There are medical autopsy hammers, tiny hammers for making jewelry, giant hammers designed to avoid the dreaded finger whack, and...
Well, we do have murder hammers, but and this is kind of... One of these hammers that's actually kind of been documented in like the visitor's guide of like what we have. And so I'll bring you back.
She shows off the ancient Tlingit warrior pick, also known as the slave killer. It's a stone hammer, hundreds of years old, that Paul happened to unearth while digging the building's basement years ago. He took it as a sign that he was on the right track, and the artifact is now displayed prominently. On average, the Hammer Heaven sees about 5,000 visitors each summer. Between admission sales, it's $5 to get in, t-shirt profits, and grants, the museum makes enough to keep Reed employed for about half the year. The quirky venue pretty much markets itself, but a January spot on the quiz show Jeopardy definitely helped boost the museum and the town. In the category Offbeat Museums, the $200 clue was Haines, Alaska's Museum of This Tool features exhibits on handle making and five ways not to hit your fingers. The guy who buzzed in got it wrong. He said knife. But folks in Haines were bursting with pride after their 15 minutes of fame.
Man, so that photo of the screen that we were on Jeopardy got like 22,000 hits. It got shared and reposted. And so there was definite interest for sure, for sure. It was pretty fun.
Haines has the only museum dedicated to hammers in the United States. A quick Google search reveals that there are other exhibits around the nation that offer displays of tools, but nothing touches the Hammer Museum here.
You can't touch this.
For AK, I'm Jillian Rogers.
You can't touch this.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Fia Ape in Anchorage. She moved here from Hawaii and just started the 10th grade at West High.
To be honest,
school in Hawaii, it's different. It's not like up here. It's, I should say, like, yeah, they have, it's like low education. Comparing to up here, there's like more education for me to, and there's more things for me to learn. First, I was thinking of joining choir because I love to sing. I was singing ever since I was little, so. I learned that friends come and go all the time. Friends, when they come and go, it's like they want to be with you at first, but then they leave you. Well, being up here is like I already feel like I'm home. Like, there's so much people who cares and who's just, I don't know, makes you feel so important. Then, to be honest, then being down there, I mean, I know I have family down there, but I learned that, to be honest, I have nothing there. I've actually been going out with friends and stuff. Like, we'd go to the movies, or we would have parties at, like, yeah, Golden Corral or whatever. I just like it up here. I just like it more than I'm back at home. It's like, when I'm here, I feel more free. Like, I could do things I used to want to do when I was back home.
Fia Ape lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Jillian Rogers and Ann Hellman. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Casey Marsh in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The University of Alaska Southeast School of Management offers online college degrees in business, human resources, management, and accounting, all created with the flexibility and convenience of e-learning. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.